Welcome, everybody. You're watching Making Life Writer Radio, and this is a special outtake with Dr. Stanley. It's Elizabeth A. Stanley, PhD, and she's the associate professor at Georgetown University, and she's the creator of mindfulness-based mind fitness training, which is MMFT, correct? And
yes, we have, MFIT.
Can I call you Dr. Stanley? It's really
fun. Please call me Liz.
Okay, welcome back, Liz, and thank you for everybody that didn't hear our radio show. You can go back to Making Life Brighter Radio, and that's on the Voice America Health and Wellness channel. You can subscribe on iTunes worldwide, and you can certainly go to makinglifebrighter.com, which you're already on if you're looking at this. And on the radio tab, there's the player, and you can see all the archive shows there and choose the show that we just did. And we're going to expand on that right now because your book is so extensive and there's so much about you that's fascinating. If you all didn't hear the radio show, please go back and listen to that so that you can get context to what we're going to discuss next. Elizabeth's book is available all over and you can find it everywhere. And we were talking about her special program and how she helps with PTSD and trauma and those that are suffering with trauma to recognize it and get through it successfully. Widen the Window is a very comprehensive book with scientific study behind it that allows you to understand the traumas, the actual markers for trauma, and moving through it in her program. So Elizabeth, let's go in and break down the sections of your book so people understand why this is so crucial.
Yes, it is such a pleasure to be here with you, Winifred. The first part of the book looks kind of more broadly at the way we as a culture, as a society, cope with stress and trauma, and how we tend to think stress and trauma are totally different things. We use different techniques, there's different people researching, but actually stress and trauma are a continuum. And there are common habits we have, often to romanticize our stress at the same time as we disown our trauma, that is making it more challenging for our minds and bodies to recover. So part one is sort of setting the stage. I call that life on the gerbil wheel. And we talk all about these habits and cultural norms that get in the way of us being really healthy and feeling well. Part two is the science behind the window. And the window is the metaphor I use for the capacity that each of us have to tolerate and function well during stress and trauma. The window is the window of tolerance to stress arousal that we each have. Part two is laying out where the window comes from, how stress and trauma work in our minds, in our bodies, how we can narrow our window, how it's initially wired in childhood through our relationships with our parents and early social environment, and then how we can narrow it through three pathways, and then what happens when our window is narrow, how that shows up in symptoms in our body. The reason there's all that science in there is, you know, when I was suffering from PTSD and depression and a lot of physical illnesses, and I started trying to get better, I felt so much shame about my conditions and judgment. And when I learned the science, it helped me take all of it so much less personally. It helped me understand that this is just a mind and body doing what minds and bodies do if they've had this set of experiences.
I love that. That's such a great point. Really, it is. That you're not personalizing it, but in fact, it's just something that's taking place.
It's something taking place, and it's very lawful in some ways. This is nature playing out as it, you know, put these things in, this thing happens. Like that just, it wasn't because I was wrong or weak or broken or any of the other many different kind of beliefs that I had about what was going on with me. So I put that much science in the book so that all of the readers who might be suffering in different ways can understand why their own minds and bodies are acting the way they are. And then part three is all about widening the window. And it includes a lot of the concepts that are in the MFIT course. It doesn't have all of the experiential exercises from MFIT, but it has a lot of additional things that are giving context to MFIT. And as I said in our previous interview, this is all about building agency, because when we can find agency in a situation, we open up new choice points so that we can function better during stress, so that we're much less likely to experience trauma, and so that we can begin to see how much every repeated experience we have, whether it's conscious or unconscious, how it's having real effects on our minds and bodies. And when we become aware of that, then we can start making different choices so that the repeated experiences we have are moving us in the direction of resilience, in the direction of happiness, in the direction of more connection in our relationships. So that's what part three is all about, how to widen the window. And it goes well with the experiential course of MFIT.
Yeah, let's talk about the course. Tell us all about the course and how what people benefit from, I mean, how they can take advantage of it and what it will do for them in relation to the book.
Yes, so the course is very much focused on helping to build a mind fitness practice. It has a lot of the science context that's in the book. And so if you read the book, it goes very well with the experiential exercises in the course. And the course is all about helping to learn how to train your brain and train your body so that you can go through stress and recover from it, and in the process, widen your window. Two of the exercises, two of the experiential exercises from the course are in the book, and you can get a guided audio version of one of those exercises. It's the first exercise in the MFIT sequence. It's called Contact Points. You can get it on my website. You can download it. It's a 5-minute audio exercise, very easy to do anywhere you are. And my website is www.elizabeth-stanley.com. Download the Contact Points exercise. That can work with the book right now. I'm in the middle of filming for an online version of MFIT.
Great.
Sounds true. Up until now, we've only
offered
it live so that people could in groups get MFIT, and we've taught in lots of different organizations. But this will allow anyone anywhere in the world on their own time to do MFIT, and it's an 8-week course. It should be available for people to get access to and download and participate in the online version of it starting probably in September of 2020.
Awesome. We need that. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope people will choose to do that and partner it with the book. I think they work really well together.
I'm sure they will, actually. The book is comprehensive, and this is not just for military. This is for everyone. Anyone and everyone can benefit, because you don't have to have abuse in your family to benefit from this book. You can actually just take the stressors of everyday life and apply that, right? And use this to apply to any kind of overwhelm or stress.
Absolutely. You know, one of the biggest misconceptions I have when I teach in regular situations, you know, normal situations, you know, average people who say to me, well, I never experienced rape, or I never was in combat, I wasn't in the military, so I shouldn't be having these issues. When we do that, when we do those comparisons with other people, our thoughts are actually overriding what's going on in our body. And when we do that, we're actually making our own stress worse. And so this is applicable to everyone. One of the three pathways to narrowing the window is just everyday chronic stress and everyday chronic tension in relationships. Most of us write that off as no big deal. And yet these things that are happening every day, they're having real effects, because any really repeated experience shows up then in ways that our brain is wired and the ways that our bodies work. Even things as what we might think of as mundane, as not getting enough sleep, have tremendous effects on building allostatic load, that stress load that we build that eventually shows up as symptoms.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about weight loss and sleep.
Yes.
What did you find?
Well, you know, many people start the new year wanting to lose weight. It is probably the number one New Year's resolution that people have. And yet for many people, they think, you know, I'm just going to diet more, or I'm going to, you know, get more exercise. What they don't understand is that when we're chronically stressed, our willpower is at its worst. Mm. power is controlled by our thinking brain functions. And when we have chronic stress, all of our thinking brain functions get compromised. So our willpower is going to be lower. And that is why, you know, most people give up their New Year's resolutions before they even get through January. That's not the way to resolve it. The other thing is that when we are chronically stressed, our body changes the hormones that we are producing. And this can happen just from chronic sleep deprivation. We will produce too much cortisol. We won't produce enough leptin. That helps keep our appetite down. We produce too much ghrelin, which makes our appetite go up. And all of those changes together make us want to eat more. We eat more sugar. We eat more high-fat things. We want to nosh in the middle of the night. All of that works against losing weight. So for me, my recommendation, if losing weight is your New Year's resolution, the most important thing to do, get more sleep. That might sound strange. I want to lose weight. I'm going to sleep. But that's right. When we're getting enough sleep, we're going to help fix some of those hormone imbalances, and we're going to help deal with some of that chronic stress. Those two things are contributing to the weight gain. So yes, you can be more careful about what you choose to eat, but you're not going to beat yourself up as much about it. If you're sleeping more, you're not going to want to eat as much.
Well, there you have it. Doctor's orders. More sleep, less stress.
Yes.
Some more exercise. But, you know, I found, I was a personal trainer back in the day. And one thing that I found is that people's body systems that aren't regulated, it wouldn't matter if they worked out more, because when they're that stressed and tired, they don't even have the recovery capacity. So they're actually injuring themselves more. It would benefit them more to actually go rest first for a while, decrease the stress load, and then go back to it.
Absolutely. I think one of the number one causes of over-efforting injury comes from not having had enough sleep, because we haven't had enough time for that recovery. It's interesting, in a lot of high-stress environments, the military is one of them, but I've seen this in other places. Like, you know, when I've worked in corporate settings, there is this cultural norm that when you're really stressed, you need to be getting more exercise. We can use exercise to mismanage our stress, because sometimes we go to do like really like loud music, heart pounding exercise as a way to manage all of that that's going in our bodies. It's actually adrenaline seeking. That's not moving towards recovery. That's a way to manage one of the forms of dysregulation we have, which is stuck on high. When we're stuck on high, we're going to crave things that are producing more energy. That's not necessarily what the body needs.
Love that. Great point, really, because adrenaline is what we're trying to get away from, right? And in your program, you're talking about that specifically, and how to recognize and manage the adrenaline essentially, right? And look at what it is. You don't have to, in your program, identify all the traumas, do you? Or you just see the symptoms, the symptomology of it.
You know, you don't need to be, it can help your thinking brain to understand, oh, this is why, you know, if you want to connect those dots. But honestly, analyzing it, figuring it all out, that's not helping it get better. It might help you allow some of the recovery to happen, because the recovery can feel a little odd sometimes, but you don't need to know. One of the real amazing things about the way that our minds and bodies are wired is that when we are, when our survival brain and our body are allowed to do what they need to do, they know how to recover on their own. It's an innate skill we have. It's just most of us spend a lot of time blocking it. You don't need to figure it out. You don't need to figure out what the traumas were. Your system, this is lawful too. If you put yourself into places where your survival brain feels safe, it's going to do recovery. Full stop. You don't have to understand why you were stressed or what the trauma was. You just have to help support yourself to feel safe.
It's kind of like love. The more love you feel, the more relaxed you are. The more relaxed you are, then you're not shooting adrenaline so much, right?
Yes. Yes.
Not everybody can feel that, though. Let's be honest. People that have a lot of trauma and stress have a difficult time being open enough to sort of recognize or feel those loving feelings or letting people in again. So that's a block right there, because the very antidote that could help you, you can't get to. So what do you think about that? What would you say?
You're absolutely right about that, Winifred. And in fact, when we are traumatized, our survival brain might interpret any kind of connection as threatening, because as we talked about in an interview, we can begin to, it can get corrupted so that something that's really safe and good for us can feel dangerous for our system. And so that's a process of having, we have to retrain our brain. We have to rewire it so that it can begin to tolerate that. And it's a process of building that way. We have to extend that limit slowly over time. We can't override it and just try and force ourselves to be connected. It has to happen gradually. And we do that by constantly checking in and seeing, is my system feeling safe right now? And that might mean you can only have a certain amount of contact right now, and then you take some time away and you let your system feel fully grounded. Then you try again later and you have a little more. You know, you saw her, she was running around my dog, was traumatized. She had two prior homes that were very abusive. And when Chloe first arrived, when I was fostering her before I fully adopted her, for the first 11 days we were together, she would not let me touch her at all. For 11 days, she walked around my house with her leash dragged around the house because she wouldn't let me take the leash off. And finally, on the 11th day, I was like, sweetie, sitting across the room, we need to start moving in a direction. And so the next day I was putting her food down and she did a drive-by with her body across the back. That was the first contact she allowed. You know, she slowly titrated having contact. Now she can sit on my body for hours, but that was, you know, but she had to do it at her own speed. Mm-hmm. Just like all the animals and pets we have survival brains too, but we often then use our thinking brain and override that. And we have all these stories of, oh, I should be able to do this or that.
Right, yeah.
Chloe doesn't have that thinking brain. She was just listening to what she could allow and letting it happen at her own speed. We have to treat our own survival brains the same way.
Yes, we have to have compassion for these processes. And so in your book, you have quite a bit of scientific research. Can you share with us some of the more compelling research that you discovered? I mean, what is it that really struck you as you got into it? What are the scientific experiments that you say, oh, wow, that's really neat. Look at that.
I was really amazed that 20 hours of training, which is what MFIT was in these tests, taught over 8 weeks with troops that were in the middle of preparing to deploy. So they're in this really stressful situation. We were asking them to practice the exercises 10 to 15 minutes a day. Just that was enough to lead to changes in the way their brain was wired. It was enough to change their hormones for immunity, for neuropeptide Y, which is one of the hormones we need to be able to function well during stress and recover afterwards. It changed how fast their heart and breathing rate would ramp up during a stressful scenario and then ramp back down afterwards, which is a sign of a very wide window going very high but coming right back down. Mm-hmm. Just 10 to 15 minutes a day could lead to these real changes after 8 weeks of training. And that was just amazing to me that we can, it doesn't have to take a lot of time. It doesn't have to be this like huge thing. We can really have, through our choices day to day, a huge impact on how our mind and body are functioning. That to me was just phenomenal. And that's why we continue to teach it.
Yeah.
I wrote the book so that other people could know that too.
That's wonderful because it just shows that it doesn't have to take forever. And it's not the old sit on the psychologist's couch, the old portrayal of psychology where, you know, you keep talking and you spin your wheels essentially, because what you're getting at in this is so critical because it's speaking to physiology. It's speaking to biology. It's speaking to actual chemical reactions that are happening in the body in association in the brain with emotions and perceptions. And that's all tying into the methods in which you're employing to undo this and actually override it or get beyond it. To recognize and get beyond it. And I think that's really important for people to understand is this is utilizing a different approach so that people can get in there and actually get it done and create sort of a new network to move forward. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And this is something that we can do for ourselves. You know, we don't have to spend a lot of money for a gym membership. We don't have to have it can be helpful to work in support with a therapist. I'm not trying to say you don't have to ever do that or don't need to if you want to do it, but it is possible once you are armed with an understanding of the way that your mind and body works, when we have that understanding for ourselves and we begin to know that where we're directing our attention has these tremendous ripple effects throughout our body. Once we understand that, then we can just become a lot more conscious of how we're going to choose to direct our attention. You know, the kinds of habits we're going to choose to feed and the kinds of habits we're going to choose to let go of. It just opens up all kinds of possibilities. And, you know, when we're caught in the worst parts of suffering from anxiety or trauma or depression, one of the hallmarks for me when I was in that place was I just felt so hopeless and despairing. Mm-hmm. I never felt like there were possibilities. And it's just amazing to begin to get to a place where we know that we actually do have possibilities, that all kind of potential out there open to us.
Well, you've certainly been through it. And as we talked about in the radio interview, you yourself have been exposed to abuse and to abusive family. You've been exposed to alcoholism. You've been exposed to rape and being accused of things. You've had a near-death experience. You've been out there in the front line in all ridiculous conditions on our behalf for this country, and you had pneumonia to boot. You've been through it, and you are actually, you know, employing what you're talking about. You've developed something not only for yourself, but also for other people at this point. And so you're walking your talk.
Yes, this mind and body that you're looking at is Exhibit A of what I teach.
Exhibit A, I love it. I love it. Well, there you have it, everybody. Thank you so much, Dr. Stanley, for coming. And you said, Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth, for coming and being with us here on Making Life Brighter Radio today. And for this special outtake, because your book is so important, and to share with everybody, this is the book, Widen the Window. And I would just like to share that with everyone because this is so important. This is kind of groundbreaking in today's understanding of neuroscience, science, and behavioral science too. So she has an amazing program, and go out and grab that book today. You can go to Amazon.com. You can also go to her website, which is
www.elizabeth-stanley.com. You can get links to the book there. You can get links to interviews, and that's where you'll be able to get the link to MFIT Online when it's ready later this year. But right now you can get the first exercise, the audio exercise for contact points. That's the first exercise in the MFIT sequence. You can download that off the website for free in partnership with the book. It will be helpful.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for being on Making Life Brighter and for making our lives brighter and giving us more that we can work with to better ourselves in this crazy world that we're in. And I could go on a laundry list of all of your amazing accolades and all the shows you've been on, all the places that you've been. You all can go see that on her website. She is incredible. And so she has really been there on the front line and for us. So my sincere gratitude and thank you. Thank you for serving this country. Thank you for being there. And thank you for helping everyone after you've done that.
Thank you so much for having me today, Winifred. I've so enjoyed our conversation. And I hope that your listeners will gain something from this conversation too.
I'm sure they will. Go jolly, everybody. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Please come back and see us again right here on Making Life Brighter.
Thank you so much.